Parables of the Messiah, number 54. Good Man of the House. Matthew 24, verse 42 to 44. Luke 12, verse 39 to 40. Near the close of his ministry, Jesus urged upon his disciples the need for watchfulness. The warning was required, although probably the disciples at the time did not so regard it. The man who follows Jesus needs always to be alert. Christ's business is pressing and calls for the full use of all the facilities of his disciples. The man who watches must see that sleep does not overcome him. Sleep would be fatal to the discharge of his duty. Disciples must be particularly alert concerning the Lord's coming. From the revelation given through the apostles, the first generations of believers understood that some time must elapse before the Master returned. How long they could not tell. But to each one the day of Christ's coming was no further away than the day of death. For in the sleep of death time passes unrecorded. To the sleeper the next moment after death is the consciousness that the Lord has come. To every believer of every age, then, the saying is true, "Watch therefore, for ye know not what hour your Lord doth come." There is always a danger that the long interval between Christ's departure and return would lead to indifference and apathy on the part of his followers. The short parable about the good man of the house has therefore its use for every generation. Its meaning is obvious, but acquires a vividness when we keep in mind the structure of many houses in Palestine. Built of mud and pebbles, sun-dried, without windows, and with a door so bulky and clumsy that no burglar would seek to effect an entry that way, such was the house Jesus had in mind. The burglar's way was to dig through the wall, a way also chosen sometimes when men wanted to remove their furniture. Ezekiel 12, verse 5. But the householder would, like Ezekiel, do it in the sight of men, while the burglar chose the hours of darkness and when not expected. "But know this," said Jesus, "that if the good man of the house had known in what watch the thief would come, he would have watched and would not have suffered his house to be broken up." Verse 43. They knew it, of course. The meaning is so obvious. But the obvious passes unnoticed unless men are alert. The good man would have watched to be ready to meet the thief had he known he was coming. The disciples know their master will come. "Therefore be ye also ready, for in such an hour as ye think not, the Son of Man cometh." When Paul wrote to the Thessalonians about the Lord's return, he said they knew that he would come as a thief in the night. The 1 Thessalonians 5, verses 1 to 3. Is the source of this figure the parable in Matthew? The reference to its suddenness is an allusion to Luke's record of the same discourse in which the parable occurs. The only occurrences of the word translated unawares in Luke 21 verse 34 and sudden in the 1 Thessalonians 5 verse 3 are in these passages. From Paul and Jesus we learn that whereas men think of night as the time for sleep, the burgled householder found that it was not always so. And the saints learn that for them the night of Gentile times is the time of watching and not sleeping. Parables of the Messiah, number 55, The Faithful and Evil Servants. Matthew 24, verses 45 to 51, Luke 12, verse 41 to 48. the short parable of Matthew 24, verses 42 to 44, was followed by two companion pictures of servants good and bad, and the fate of each. Who is the faithful and wise servant whom his Lord hath made ruler over his household, to give them meat in due season? Verse 45. The man is an upper servant in charge of the house, whose duty was to provide the food of the household. It has been thought, therefore, by some, that it has reference only to the apostles. Others believe that the clergy are the successors of the apostles, and, possessing an authority like theirs, refer the parable to the apostles and clergy. Pastor Russell, founder of the movement which has developed into Jehovah's Witnesses, claimed that the faithful and wise servant was none other than himself, and the teaching of his book, Ransom for All, was meat in due season. The parable must have a wide application, however, for in chapter 25, Jesus makes the operative words which describe the servant the basis of two parables. The parable of the virgins brings out the wise phase, and the parable of talents the aspect of faithfulness. These two parables are essential parts of the same discourse as that recorded in chapter 24, and but for the chapter break would be readily recognized as an expansion and application of his question. Who is the faithful and wise servant? The two parables supply Christ's own answer. The question form used in the parable invites an examination of the kind of servant that is well-pleasing. That he was an upper servant did not remove him from the servant class. There are teachers, exhorters, and arranging brethren, but all are brethren. Elders are to be esteemed for their work's sake, and appreciation shown of those who labour in the word and doctrine. There are apostolic principles which are easily overlooked in a democratic age. Brethren with the duties of exhorting and teaching, if faithful and wise, provide meat in due season. The word is suited to the occasion, the essential aim being the building up in faith and knowledge of the word, exhorting to obedience to the commandments of Christ. The speaker with only one theme, which he develops in season and out of season, does not provide a balanced diet. The responsibility of the brother who speaks to his fellow believers is great, but so also will be his reward if he is faithful. The unfaithful and foolish servant, the evil servant, Jesus calls him, deluded by the uncertainty of his Lord's return, smites his fellow servants and becomes a glutton and a drunkard. The smiting of servants is hateful to the Lord, and the words call for sober thought. They have sometimes been used by those who are not zealous for maintaining the truth, to abuse men who endeavour faithfully to do so. The words are no excuse for toleration of things the Lord disapproves. They are not to be taken literally of physical blows, but they are a strong condemnation of men who are overbearing, who love to have the preeminence, and who are not kindly in their treatment of their fellows. How much the Lord abominates such ways is seen in the severe sentence, "The Lord shall cut him in sunder." To be cut asunder, divided in two, and to be cast out with the hypocrites, describes the fate and also the classification of evil servants. A hypocrite is already a divided personality, and whatever may be signified by the word translated cut asunder, which means literally cut into two parts, there is evidently an indication of a punishment which corresponds to the character of the condemned. Luke's record of the parables of the good man of the house and of the faithful and unfaithful servants relates them to an earlier period in the ministry than Matthew's gospel. Luke also adds two further comments concerning the punishment of disobedient servants. The servant who tyrannizes over his fellow servants is cut asunder. His is a positive and grievous fault. There are, however, faults not so serious, which call for appropriate punishment. The one who knows his Lord's will and fails to do it is beaten with many stripes. But the one who makes mistakes in ignorance will receive few stripes. The last half of Luke 12, verse 48, appears to enunciate the principle of the parables of pounds and talents. A man who receives a gift has to make a return proportionate to the size of the gift. If a man has committed to him a deposit, then more is looked for in return than he received. In the same way, defection of duty calls for varying punishments. Parables of the Messiah, number 56, The Ten Virgins, Matthew 25, verses 1 to 13. The primary significance of this parable is to be found in Christ's words immediately preceding it and in the comment following it. Jesus had asked, "Who then is a faithful and wise steward?" Chapter 24, verse 45. And in the parable of the virgins, he shows in what wisdom consists. And in the parable following, the talents, he emphasizes the quality of faithfulness. The command of Jesus added to the parable of the virgins is, "Watch therefore, for ye know neither the day nor the hour wherein the Son of Man cometh." Chapter 25, verse 13. With this guidance, we must seek in the parable for those details that inculcate wisdom and watchfulness. Difference of opinion exists about the details of the marriage customs upon which the parable is based. Some affirm that the virgins assembled at the house of the bride, and from there went out to meet the bridegroom when his coming was announced. Others regard their part to be that of meeting the bridegroom and going with him to fetch the bride. Another view is that the bridegroom, accompanied by friends, went to the house of the bride when she and her companions were escorted to his home. On the way, a group waiting at some convenient point on the road join the party and go forward with the procession to the festivities. The latter group are, on this view, the virgins of the parable. Fortunately, the general meaning of the parable is not dependent upon which of these accounts of the wedding customs is the correct one. The parable is told to bring out the two particular lessons indicated. We introduce incongruity by asking such questions as, "If the saints are represented by the virgins, who is the bride?" Or, "How can the saints be both virgins and bride?" No parable can set forth every aspect of truth, and unwise efforts to trace correspondences that were not primarily intended can bring farcical results. The whole emphasis of the parable is upon the preparedness of the virgins. 10 appears to have been a usual number of the company that goes to meet the bridegroom. The division into two equal sections clearly cannot be given a corresponding arithmetical proportion in the number of saints accepted and rejected. The numbers are here only part of the incidentals of the story. All had lamps, but 5 were furnished with oil, the others were not. light is truth in the two aspects revealed in the Scriptures. Paul speaks of the light of the knowledge of the glory of God, and men are light bearers as they declare the knowledge of God. Truth is also something done, as well as something believed. Both light and truth are thus the opposites of evil deeds, as Jesus declared, "Everyone that doeth evil hateth the light, neither cometh to the light, lest his deeds should be reproved. But he that doeth truth cometh to the light, that his deeds may be made manifest, that they are wrought in God." John 3, verse 20 and 21. By knowledge applied to action, a man doeth truth. Thought must express itself in deeds. Men have to shine as lights in the world, holding forth the word of life, and also to let their light so shine that men may see their good works and glorify their Father which is in heaven. Philippians 2, verse 15 and 16. Matthew 5, verse 16. Oil, which is the basis of light, can thus be regarded as the Word of God. Without it, there can be no preparation for Christ. The gospel may be understood, but apart from the combustion of the oil in the mind, there is no development that fits for entrance into the marriage feast. Men may accept the gospel, and thus make known that they are going to meet the Lord, they set out, but fail to consider the equipment needed. They take the lamp, but do not attend to providing a supply of oil. They make no progress in the knowledge of God, and no growth in spiritual things. In the parable, the bridegroom's absence proved longer than expected. All fell to nodding, and were overtaken with sleep. This hints at the long interval that would elapse before the Lord's return. So long has it been that relatively all the virgins have fallen on sleep and lie in the dust. A cry will presently awaken them, and it will then be shown who have prepared and are ready to meet the Lord, and who are poorly equipped and unready for that event. The dire need of the foolish is expressed in the call, "Give us of your oil." But character cannot be transferred. It is individual and personal. The only answer possible is the one given, that they should go to those who sell and buy for themselves. In this market, application is the purchase price. "Come ye, buy and eat, yea, come, buy wine and milk, without money and without price. Incline your ear and come unto me, hear and your soul shall live," is a prophet's explanation of how the wine and milk of God's covenant can be procured. Isaiah 55, verse 1 and 3. At the present time, there is opportunity to buy. It will pass. The apostolic counsel to buy up the opportunities has only a present application. The foolish therefore find themselves not included in the bridal procession, and when they seek admittance, the door is closed. Demands for admission bring only the answer, "I know you not." The form of the petition, "Lord, Lord," and of Christ's answer, "I know you not," links the parable with the similar sayings in the Sermon on the Mount. "Not everyone that saith unto me, Lord, Lord, shall enter into the kingdom of heaven, but he that doeth the will of my Father which is in heaven." Many will say to me in that day, "Lord, Lord, have we not prophesied in thy name, and in thy name have cast out devils, and in thy name have done many wonderful works?" And then will I profess unto them, "I never knew you. Depart from me, ye that work iniquity." Matthew 7, verse 21 to 23. The protest, "I never knew you," occurs both in this quotation from the Sermon on the Mount and in the parable of the virgins. In the one there is empty profession, in the other empty oil vessels. In both there has been failure to do. The verses which follow in Matthew 7, verse 24 to 27, continue the instructions that hearing and doing are both essential for approval. These parallels confirm that the application outlined is the one intended by Jesus. Watch, therefore, is Christ's counsel. Be on the alert, not so much in looking for the coming one as in recognizing the need for being ready to meet him when the call comes. The preparation is continuous, calling for patience and perseverance. Procrastination is a thief of opportunity as well as of time, and opportunity closes with the coming of sleep. There will be time is a vain cry, for not only is there irreparable loss, but such an attitude lulls the mind into a false security. Ye know not the day nor the hour of his coming. Only today is ours. The closed door of some of these sayings denotes the final exclusion from his presence and kingdom. The horror of this to sensitive souls who believe in the indestructibility of the soul has led to strange interpretations and much wishful thinking. When the mortality of man is recognized, the closed door and similar sayings, whilst teaching solemn lessons, do not raise such problems as the endless suffering of those rejected by Christ. When death, cessation of being, is seen to be the inevitable result of disobedience, the exclusion of those who do not apply themselves to preparation presents no moral difficulty. Jesus himself uses the word fit as a qualification for God's kingdom. The unfit pass away as though they had never been. The parable gives a picture of what will obtain when the Lord comes. Then shall the kingdom of heaven be likened to 10 virgins. To all who are related to divine things, such a preview gives an urgency to the command to watch. For the most important lesson is that they that were ready went in with him to the marriage. For comments on the figure of the bridegroom, see the parable of the bridegroom.